Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. In the words of the great Gilbert Brown, wake up, Wisconsin, wipe the dust out your eyes.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Hey, good morning, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's finally Friday.
Oh, yeah. And that other guy.
Uh-huh.
Did you wipe the dust out your eyes?
Yeah, well, having dust in your eyes hurts. That's a painful phenomenon. You want to get that out. I wiped the dust out early this morning to get outside, and it was 38 degrees this morning. Yeah, so beautiful spring day. It's almost summer, actually.
So when I went outside, it was 45.
Mm-hmm.
You were and on the water, Sandy.
Yeah, we were out on the river, and it was bracing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bracing morning.
Well, that water hasn't warmed up yet. A body of water as big as that, I mean.
Yeah,
well,
it takes a while.
It's
reluctant about getting warming up.
Well, it should be warmer than it is because it is basically June, but we've had such alternating temperatures in May that it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a while.
It's confused.
Yeah. Like we are.
Like we are. Yeah. Like the country, you know.
Yeah. Everything. Up is down, down is up, left is left, is right, right is left. It's
court a different world. We're in the court of the Red Queen.
Oh, okay. Did you see the Celtics?
No, I didn't see it, but I read about it this morning. They won another one, so it's going to stretch out. You know, could they come back? I mean, they could.
You just took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Miami looks so disheveled. I've never seen them look. The Celtics have figured it out, right? And then they had one of their better players, their point guard, turned his ankle in practice. It must have been pretty severe because he didn't play. And he and they're down, guys. It's not like maybe they might be calling on you and I, Sandy. The boat's sinking.
Yeah. Wow. I am what is called the bottom of the barrel.
We are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just watching it, it looks like what we thought it was
going to be.
Should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe, you know, Miami might have just gone, had a little bit of a golden period. They definitely were overachieving based on everyone's expectations. I mean, they overachieved against the
Bucks,
and
right.
And then,
I think the bubble has burst.
Yeah, it could
and
be.
And just the way this will be the first time in 159.
Come back from 3-0, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never been done before. So, but just by the way it looked the last two games, it seems plausible.
Well, now they got to go and win one in Miami, right?
It seems plausible, Sandy.
Yeah.
Okay. Because number one, they seem to have figured out the Jimmy Butler phenomena. They got the bodies, the long guys. He can't shoot over. The guys are blocking his shot.
Yeah.
The Bucks couldn't even get near the guy.
Well, you know, Giannis did talk about he wished he had been put in charge of guarding him a little more, and it probably is true. You know, a guy like Giannis on Butler should be pretty disabling.
Well, that's kind of what they've got, a guy 6'11 on him, and that guy's blocking his shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Butler likes to go down in the paint.
Well, he likes to do that, or he likes to kind of create 3 feet of space and
right.
a fall away jumper, but you can't necessarily throw
not
that over
a guy 6'11.
Yeah.
So it's it's something else, man. And I don't know, man. This could happen, you know, based on how easily they've handled Miami over the last couple games. And it's a complete 360-degree change, which I've never seen. Not in the playoffs, not like that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we can move on. I just wanted to, you know, put that out there. But let's, Sandy, let's, where to begin?
Begin.
Ron DeSantis has now stepped into the fray. And now all hell is going to break loose because now Donald Trump is really going to unload. And it's going to take all the air out of everything. Because how many months do we have to have this Pier 6 brawl that's going to happen? Because DeSantis now has to retaliate. He can't sit back and let Trump call him Ron the Sanctimonious and all the other things that he's going to be calling him without DeSantis having to stand up to him. Is that correct?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, DeSantis has slid. You know, he was this meteor bright. You know, everyone was 5 months ago, everyone was basically thinking Ron DeSantis was the leader. And there were sort of national groups in each state lining up to maybe they should get on early with Ron DeSantis, and all of that seemed to fizzle, you know. So
why do you think what are the reasons you think that it fizzled? Donald Trump?
I just think Donald Trump sucks the oxygen out of the room in terms of getting attention. He gets attention so easily from the media; it's like reflex. Trump does something, we talk about it. Here we are. Right. We're talking about it.
Well,
and so he's just got free advertising every day, all the time, no matter what. You know, it's most of what he does is outrageous, but it puts him in the news media and crowds everything else out. And the people who support him have jumped completely on board with this. Donald Trump is a victim, and everything that is done now in terms of pursuing Donald Trump for criminal conduct or whatever is just, from the standpoint of a lot of his supporters, just further victimizing. He's achieved martyr status. Really? I mean, it's astounding. This person, Donald Trump, could somehow achieve martyr status, but I think he has.
So I can't argue with that. That's the perfect terminology. And I talk to people who support him, and they say, well, they're going after him, and they're doing this, and they're doing that, and it's not fair, and it's not. And I'm like, listen, if you want someone to be a martyr, it shouldn't be a guy with a personality like Donald Trump. I'm all for martyrs. How would I say it?
Martyr, yeah.
Yeah, martyrism, I guess. Yeah, I don't know, whatever sure. It is. But not for a guy like that.
Well, you know, not yes. A billionaire who's basically screwed everyone in terms of, and I mean that
literally
from a business standpoint, but I guess I mean it literally too. He's a disreputable person who has achieved sort of a martyr status, a heroic martyr status through essentially a life of being disreputable. But
you're not going to get people to change it. They love him. For whatever reason, they love him.
Well, he's symbolic, and he's symbolic of people who are against the deep state. I mean, he clearly is an anti-establishment, right? He's an iconoclastic, meaning he's different than everyone else, and so he's now claims that just because he's different, he's being attacked. I mean, doesn't that sound like a familiar refrain from for the poor and downtrodden? But suddenly Donald Trump has been able to lump himself into that category, and he's firmly there. I just don't think that anyone on the Republican side is going to be very successful at elbowing him out. I think if he gets convicted of one of these crimes that he's being charged with, it could make a difference. But then there's also the scenario that this guy, Ty Cobb, who used to be his lawyer, a couple of days ago painted this scenario that said, look, Donald Trump
is going to jail.
Might go to jail. He'll be in jail when he gets elected. And then he can pardon himself from his jail cell, because once he's elected, he has this potentially unlimited pardon power. And it is a question, can someone pardon themselves? But maybe we'll give him an opportunity to find out.
So we're laughing about this, but...
Can you imagine Donald Trump having Macron come and visit him and sit and talk to him through a plexiglass window at a federal prison?
Well, the fact...
That would be odd.
I don't understand our government, Sandy, from the perspective of... A felon can be president of the United States.
Yeah, the Constitution doesn't create a standard for the presidency that would not permit a felon, an ex-felon.
Once you're a felon, you're a felon, right?
I mean, I guess you are. He's a jolly good felon.
Yeah. So if the insanity in that, Sandy, is that the average person who becomes a felon can't get a job.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, in some states you can't vote, and I mean there are restrictions on felons post conviction, post serving their sentence that lives with them forever. But yeah, the founding fathers, I suppose, didn't even imagine this would be an issue. I guess
you know, Sandy, you said here we are talking about Donald Trump. How can you not? Let's just be honest. Here, none of us could have ever imagined in our wildest dreams, when Donald Trump lost, that we'd ever have to worry about him. Right? Would you say?
No, I mean,
we'd ever get to this point.
I keep coming back to the Joker in Batman?
Yeah, listen, we got to go to a break. Hang on.
Yeah.
Talking about the Joker in Batman.
Well, Donald
but
Trump
you're right.
is the Joker in Batman.
Got to yeah. go to a break. We'll be right back. It's just...
To me, 'cause I know she breaks so easily.
I've been liking your music lately.
Oh.
And then I told her,
yeah,
but I knew no matter how I try to console her, she just do the best she could. But there are times the best is no damn good, and no matter how you try to be kind, there's always still a part of you leave behind. When it falls apart, there's no easy way to break somebody's heart.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, a few more minutes on.
Well, we
the
left
great
it.
One.
I was comparing Donald to the Joker, and then
Nicholson Joker.
Yes, ever since I've had that image in my mind, I think of Donald with lipstick and white and super white makeup on his face, and it all kind of fits in. But you know, the Marvel comic, you know, they always have these people who are way out there, right?
Right.
Like the Joker was just too evil to believe, but he was powerful.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that we've slipped into a politics which is somewhere between Marvel Comics and World Wrestling in terms of its approach when we deal with him. And, you know, he'll be in the news every day because, like we were saying off the air, he'll say something crazy every day.
That's because he says something crazy every day.
Yeah, but then we talk about it.
I know.
And the media's, he's learned how to stonewall the media in terms of the follow-up questions. If he's asked a question, it turns into a nasty question if it's asked by a woman. But he just doesn't have to provide details.
All right, let's go to the phone lines quickly. Ken from Sturgeon Bay. Good morning, Ken. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I think you guys are suffering from TDS.
What? Trump what?
You guys have the TDS, the mental condition in which a person is driven effectively insane due to the dislike of Donald Trump, to the point which they abandon all logic or reason.
Huh. Did you understand that?
Not exactly. But here's what I can't decide. I can't decide whether you're in, whether you're for us or against us.
So, Ken, can you explain it where we can understand what it was you just said?
It's a Trump derangement syndrome. It's a medical condition which a person is driven effectively insane due to their dislike of Donald Trump.
Oh,
talked about him repeatedly every day.
Yeah, we've been talking about Donald Trump repeatedly every day.
Yeah, we try not to actually, but and I think
Sandy,
actually
speechless.
I strain more to try and understand the Trump phenomena than I do. I suppose it's fodder for jokes and it's fodder for levity and it's fodder for hyperbole, but it's much more than that. It's a serious proposition. And he obviously strikes a chord, a serious chord, with a whole bunch of people. So for the people who support him, he's not a joke. And there's a reason behind it that we all need to understand. So I think on this show, we try to spend time understanding the phenomena. But you're right. It does drive everyone in a different direction.
But it is safe to say, Sandy, there's never been a guy ever like him in the White House.
I'm old, but I'm not that old. No, but
Sandy,
there are some who purportedly were unusual characters who were in the White House.
I'm quite sure, actually,
there's never been anything quite like this.
Ken? All right, okay. So anyway, Sandy, you know, we're going to finish out these last couple minutes on Donald Trump, and then we'll move on. But the Republican Party itself looks at Donald Trump, and they quiver.
Well, I mean, what's happened in politics is that parties generally have much less power. They're there. People have to belong to one or the other to get elected. But the individuals raise money. Individuals don't rely on parties for very much. And as a result, I think Trump represents a threat to the Republican Party infrastructure more than anything else.
Because he's independent.
And on the Democratic side, they have sort of the same dichotomy between centrists and progressives. So I think parties are kind of vestigial.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. Got a lot to talk about. We'll be right back.
Me and not treat me like a friend. I wanted her to say there'd be someday I can crawl in on my knees to ask her back again. But she acted like a lady. Oh, what a lady. I thought that she'd break down, but she smiled at me and never made a sound. And I guess she understood in her way, 'cause her silence told me everything she could not say. When it falls apart, well, there's just There's no easy way to bring somebody's home.
By the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids.
Us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. I mean, it's Fridays with Sandy. Sandy, Henry Kissinger is turning 100.
Wow.
That's to me, that's amazing.
Well, and he still has his faculties. He's 100 and he's still expressing opinions and people are still listening to him. So
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Henry Kissinger, that's from a different era for sure.
For sure. I mean, he was, 1971, he was Secretary of State. So that's a long time ago.
So the reason I brought that up, Sandy, is think back to the times that Henry Kissinger was so relevant and what was going on in the country during those years and during those times, and contrast it to where we are now. And it's kind of an amazing evolution.
I shared an intimate moment with Henry Kissinger at one point.
Really?
I did. So I had a college roommate who would invite me out to California to the Bohemian Club, which is this controversial encampment for important people, and important people, and then someone like me who's not. And so, and they have 2,400, it's all men, which makes it controversial. It's in this redwood grove. Their plumbing doesn't really facilitate everyone using the bathrooms because they have a septic system. So they recommend trees. And so there are, sure enough, people there, when it comes time to relieve yourself, you use trees. And so the first day I was there, I was administering to a redwood tree, and directly to my right, doing the same thing,
was Henry Kissinger.
Wow. Yeah. So, we shared, that was an odd moment, but I just thought I'd share that with the audience.
So let me, and the only reason I brought that up is when you've been around long enough to remember guys like that in times like that.
Yeah, I have trouble remembering him.
But I mean, his time and our country and where it was and working.
What?
You can say what you want to say about him in those times, but certainly government worked during those times.
Well, he had a very pragmatic approach to world affairs. He basically developed this concept of realpolitik, which was to recognize the circumstances of each country and what it took to develop a dynamic in the world that was favorable to the United States. So he was the one who drove, for instance, Nixon in the direction of opening up relations with China. And so he did that independent from any sense we had about whether we liked the Chinese government internal to China. He did that because he thought it was important for world affairs and also to drive a bit of a wedge between China and Russia and to divide up power. So his concept was recognizing the hegemony of various countries, and it's something that I adhere to too. I think it's what's wrong with our current foreign policy is we've migrated from that to something that we claim to be ideological, but it's not.
So let's do this, Sandy. Let's move to the debt ceiling and where it is. Depending on what you read and what you hear, you keep hearing signs that they're getting closer from both McCarthy's camp and from Joe Biden's camp. And the fact that these men are kind of negotiating themselves, they've got some folk with them, but the two of them are kind of hammering out some things. And you know, it's not like they're kissing cousins, right? I mean, Joe Biden really could barely tolerate Kevin McCarthy. It's just true. And McCarthy probably the same way.
You know, my view of this whole thing is that it has so far over the years been political theater. It's a time of massive posturing on issues, which is essentially hypocritical from the conduct that both parties have been exercising, other than in this period, this brief period of time when this approval needs to be made. Because as we said before, increasing the debt ceiling is required not because we've, in light of what we're going to spend in the future, it has to be increased because what Congress has already approved in the past. So this is all about past decisions, not future decisions. And so this comes at a time then where it's possible to posture then about what future decisions should be. But the notion of holding hostage the credit rating of the United States for in exchange for trying to install some kind of discipline into the fiscal process of Washington is the political theater part of this. And so I, for one, am sanguine, meaning that I'm optimistic that it will get solved. It'll probably go down to the wire because that makes for really good theater, and that the leaders will be able to get their people in Congress to pass it. But you know, as you said earlier, there is apparently some dissension amongst those who are sitting members as compared to the leaders. So the Democrats are suggesting Joe Biden's too flexible. And I guess the Republican conservatives are suggesting that maybe McCarthy's being too flexible too.
There's no question that is what is taking place, Sandy. And all that I've been reading and watching and listening to, damage has already been done. The thought that the interest rates on the debt have gone up. And as we were talking earlier, you know, it may not appear to be much, but, you know, I guess 1% on $31 trillion.
A lot of money. No, I mean, you know, I think the financial community has suggested that that people have shifted their money from Treasury bonds into the debt of large corporations.
Because they're afraid.
Well, and because they think that that's a good hedge. And that process of taking some money out of the buy side, the people who would be willing to buy Treasury instruments, means that the interest rate will have to go up on the Treasury instruments to attract that money back. So it's already happening, but it's also threatening the credit rating. Last time around, the credit rating of the U.S. was dropped by some of the rating agencies, and it was not because the trigger was pulled on this. It was because they were flirting with it, as they are now. So, you know, biennial flirtations with this are damaging to the cost of capital for the United States.
Let's do this. Let's go to CJ. Hey, good morning, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to remind you how we got here, though. The day after the inauguration, Kevin McCarthy reached out to President Biden and offered to get together. Remember, the president refused to negotiate.
Well, Kevin McCarthy at that time, I don't think, was in a position to sit down with the president of the United States. He wasn't. He wasn't the speaker.
What do you mean he wasn't? That.
Well, you said the inauguration of Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi was still the speaker. So, I mean, what are you talking about?
The day after Kevin McCarthy was sworn in, he reached out to him.
Okay? Oh, okay. Well, and
that was 2 years later.
The mere fact that were here, the president could have raised the debt ceiling when they had control of the Senate, the Congress, and executive. They refused to do that. This was a political ploy.
Well, Trump actually now wait, CJ, Trump could have done this. Trump could have done the same thing at the time that they had a political majority as well, but they didn't.
The mere fact, can I finish my point once, Sandy, without you talking?
No, but he's just trying to, we're trying to get to facts. You're the guy who's always saying facts, CJ. We're just trying to make sure that there are facts that you are, you know, talking about.
Well, no, if you have a point, CJ, that would be great. I wish you did.
Go ahead, CJ.
Real nice, Sandy. You know what? You're such a schmuck.
No, go ahead, CJ. You don't need to call names. Go ahead.
You can't refute my facts. The mere fact that the president refused to negotiate for 3 months. He stated it. We listened to you. Can't. And now they're talking about things that really matter. So you guys are concerned about the $32 trillion debt. I'm surprised because you want to keep spending. Your grandkids own $95,000.
Well, CJ, look, I think on this station, and at least my conversation has suggested that both parties have lacked fiscal discipline. But if you go back and look at history as to when and how that debt was developed, you'll find that more of that debt was developed under Republican presidents than under Democratic presidents.
Here now. And this president want to keep spending.
CJ, did you hear what he just said? What's your response to that?
Parties have caused this.
CJ.
Okay, but
no.
We're here now. This president, President Biden, wants to keep the cost at COVID expenses. The you never discussed the particulars of the Republican offer.
So hold on. So CJ, give us some of the particulars of the Republican offer.
Well, and actually, CJ, we don't know what position Biden has taken, and I don't think we on this radio show have discussed it because the particulars haven't been presented to the public. I think.
Well, that's why I thought CJ must know some. That's why I asked him.
Well, I think the Republican side has revealed some of what they're wanting, but there has been no revelation about what position the Democrats are taking on it. So I don't think we know. I'm fairly optimistic that there will be a settlement. I'm pretty confident the settlement will involve spending limits over the duration of the over a several year period.
Sandy, the Republicans passed a bill. The Senate, Schumer hasn't done squat. And yes, the particulars of the bill, very responsible by the Republicans. Very. They wanted to go back to 2022 spending and then increase by 1%. And your party refused work restrictions. They want people to look for work if they're not working.
Well, work restrictions, my understanding of the work restrictions was it related to receiving medical insurance. As on the one level, and so I think, that's a serious policy issue, and a serious problem in terms of a social problem.
Well, Bernie Sanders says cut to aid programs should be off the table, and so at the same time, Bernie Sanders is saying that should be off the table. Republicans are saying to McCarthy, those things have to be on the table. So that's an issue. You keep saying that the Republicans passed their bill. It doesn't matter. Them passing their bill in the House means nothing if it doesn't get – it has to get – accepted by the Senate. And so you keep throwing this up, well, the Republicans passed their bill, as if somehow that's the end of it.
Well, I mean, you know, we've gone through a decade of paralysis where one house will continue to pass whatever they want to pass.
No, it doesn't.
The Democrats have done it as well in different circumstances where you pass bills not because you believe they're going to pass into law. You pass bills because it's political posture. And so, I would say that's probably what this bill was.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, CJ. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
That's not confined to the borders of the city of Waukesha.
You don't remember Peter Gunn, do you?
I do.
All right. It takes, you know, a couple old bluebeards like you and I to remember Peter Gunn. Anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram.
couple of old schmucks. I'm still recovering.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Smuck one and smuck two.
Yeah.
Let's go to Chuck from Delafield. Hey, good morning, Chuck. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Well, you had just had a caller on that wasn't just in left field. He wasn't even in the ballpark on the limit, save it, and grow proposal from the House of Representatives.
Yes, sir. Go
that's
ahead.
That's a very damaging proposal, and that's not my opinion. That's the analysis of Mark Zandi, chief economist from Moody's Analytics, hardly a left-wing organization. He testified on May 4 before the U.S. Senate Budget Committee, and he said what that passing that is going to shave at least a half point off of GDP immediately, crash 800,000 jobs, and have long-lasting damage to the U.S. economy. That was the Senate testimony. I have not heard that broadcast widely in the media. That was on May 4. That's serious stuff. This is like putting the gun to the head of the president and saying, we're either going to crash the economy by disregarding the debt limit scenario, and we're going to crash it. Let it default. Or go into the airplane and jump without a parachute. What's your choice? This is economic terrorism by the Republicans.
Well, I will agree with you that this political theater about the debt limit does constitute essentially a hostage process. It is definitely a blink. You know, it's like the game of chicken with automobiles out on the highway. And it's almost as damage, potentially injurious as that game, because the consequences of actually defaulting are so extreme. And if these people who are in Congress can't find discipline, fiscal discipline, on their own without essentially playing Russian roulette, then we should elect some other people, because it's a display of irresponsibility.
At minimum, because it is catastrophic in terms of its effect if we do default.
Yeah, it's essentially the financial nuclear button, and the United States has been playing with it's sort of ignoring the fact that it's a little bit fragile. I mean, it's not like you're guaranteed to be the world currency just because you are. England found that out with the pound. You know, when I was a young man, the pound was the world currency. And England lost that status, and it meant a great deal to the English economy to lose that status, and it was negative. And so, you know, we can lose that status too, And one of the shortest roads to losing that status is losing the financial rating of our treasury instrument by being less reliable.
The debt ceiling is a debt ceiling. It's not budget negotiations. They're trying to make this all about budget negotiations. That's separate. This is money spent, approved and spent. Why are we approving that money twice?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, I am a believer that this 14th Amendment clause that says the government shall do nothing to invalidate its debt, the federal government, should encompass this, because when Congress enacts legislation, they should implicitly be enacting all of the law necessary to fund it. And part of that funding is the indirect funding of the debt necessary when they enact legislation that creates a deficit.
And you were absolutely right, Sandy. You said before that this is already costing us. It's already costing us money. Back in April, for the April Treasury auctions for the securities, bills, notes, and bonds, demand significantly weakened for them, forcing the yield on the bonds up.
Right.
So we're paying more of our pocket already, and it's continuing. Not to mention when Standard & Poor's, Moody's Analytics, and Fitch come out, and they will most likely come out and downgrade the credit. And that's going to add more interest cost.
Well, and
it's going in reverse. This plan is, the Republican plan is like walk the plank or jump out of the airplane without a chute.
Well, and the other thing is that what they're talking about is the debt, right? And the debt is what constitutes the basis for all of our financial, for the debt instruments that the Treasury is having to service all the time. We have to pay the interest and principal on our debt. And what we're doing with this exercise is making our debt more expensive to service. And so we're going the wrong direction. You know, they'd like us to create have a debt override over our country that is less expensive to service. And yet posturing like this makes it more expensive ipso facto. So, you know, even if we start exercising the discipline to not increase the debt, with this conduct, we have increased the cost of servicing the debt.
Hey, Chuck, man, thank you very much for the call. Always enjoy your conversation, man. Really appreciate it. Got to go to a break. Dave, hang on. We'll get you on the other side. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.